This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's Ascensus.com.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Sure, yes, Election Day. Might I remind you, though, the economy don't wait. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today. This one's the 8th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There are in this economy, says the Small Business Administration, something like 32.5 million small businesses. And that's companies with 500 employees or less. The vast majority of those small businesses have, of course, far fewer people working in them. And they account for something like 45-ish% of all private payrolls. So it should be a matter of no small concern that some recent surveys show those small businesses aren't especially optimistic about where things are headed. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore gets us going.
Anna Hammond is founder and CEO of Matriarch Foods. They take surplus food and remnants that would be wasted and turn them into products for schools, food banks, even hospitals.
We just launched the first climate neutral upcycled pasta sauces.
She's about to increase her staff from 4 to 7.
You know, I'm feeling pretty good and pretty hopeful despite the state of the world.
That said,
I think inflation is causing some hesitancy to make changes for sure. And many businesses are kind of tightening their belts.
Matriarch's climate-friendly upcycled foods may still be in demand, but for many other small businesses, the mood can be summarized in one word.
Caution.
Anna Rathbun is chief investment officer of investment advisor CBIZ, which recently did several surveys of small and medium-sized businesses.
81% of them have told us that they are expecting a recession in the coming months.
The National Federation of Independent Business surveyed its members. Most of them have fewer than 20 employees. Chief economist Bill Dunkelberg asked what their top issue was.
Inflation is number one.
The number two problem was the problem that used to be number one,
which is the availability of qualified workers.
Both CBIZ and the NFIB found hiring among small businesses fell in October overall. And yet, surveys show many small businesses do want to hire people, especially as the holidays approach. Again, Anna Rothman with CBIZ.
So we find ourselves in a weird conundrum, a rock and a hard place, of expecting a recession and trying to be cautious, but at the same time, needing help.
It is, she says, a very strange phenomenon. But when has anything not been strange in the last 2 years? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Yeah, that's a fair point. On Wall Street today, the land of big business, to be sure, optimism was the word of the day. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so that was small business big picture with Sabri. We're going to go up close now to a farm in Iowa where April Hemmes plants corn and soybeans, and she is fresh off the harvest. So we got her back on the phone this morning. April.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you? I don't think anybody's called me buddy since I was like five.
Oh, really?
Man. Oh, yeah.
I'm doing pretty good because I had a record harvest this year.
Well, that's why we got you on the phone, April Hammes. So look, we talked in May and you were all, we had, it was terrible planting and the crop's going to be lousy and this and that. And I said, and I said, well, we'll call you back at harvest time. And here we are. And now it's like, everything's great. What happened?
Yay! Well, I don't know because actually no farmer around me. I was kind of in the Cinderella or Goldilocks spot. We got just the right amount of rain, but we're still in a drought. The entire state of Iowa, actually, you know this, the whole West is, but we just got rains at the right time. And it just goes to show the breeding of the plants and everything just worked for me. So I feel pretty blessed.
Fair enough. And you know, farmers work hard enough, so you should get whatever good things are coming to you. Now, what's on your list of worries, though? Because if I learn one thing talking to you over the years, it's
Where do I start?
Well, that's exactly it. Where do you start?
Well, and with the drought, as I mentioned before, we have record low levels on the Mississippi, which I've seen a lot of national stories. And so not only can our crops not get down, we put them in barges and get down to be exported. But for the spring, the fertilizer comes up the Mississippi. So that's a big worry. I have my potash and phosphorus on already for next year, but nitrogen, that all comes up the Mississippi too, or a lot of it for the Midwest. So that's a big worry for many farmers.
So those input costs that we talked about in May, you're still thinking they're going to be high for you for next year?
They're going to be higher than they were last year, is right. And so, you know, and with the higher crops that we had, it took a lot of goodies out of the ground, the corn. So you have to replace that. So, yeah, a lot higher costs, a lot more expensive getting things in. And the railroad, is there going to be a railroad strike? We hope not. I wish I had a crystal ball and say everything was going to be dandy, but
don't we all? Let me ask you a serious question though. And we've been talking for a long time, you and me, so I figure I can kind of ask this and you'll give me the straight answer. You are, I think, and you kind of have to be because farmers kind of have to be, you're an optimistic person by nature, but does this all not just kind of weigh on you, all the, like, you know, gestures wildly, everything that's happening?
Well, yeah, but the thing that I decided a long time ago, because I'm headed into my 38th year farming, is I cannot fret about the things I can't control. You know, I know my cost of production. I've locked in some profits on selling ahead. So, yes, it does weigh on me, but I just, you know, met with the banker today and he's a brave, I always say, he's going to give me another line of credit for next year. And I always look at him and go, you're a brave man. You know? So, I mean, that's really how I look at it. I cannot worry about the things I can't control. I can only manage them as best as I can.
38 years is a long time. How much longer are you going to do this?
It is. I don't know. My daughter just asked me that. Mom, how much longer are you going to do this?
And?
Well, here's the deal. I can hire people to do stuff, but I still really enjoy it. And my grandfather worked for me till he was 98. So I got a ways to go.
Your grandfather worked for you?
He drove every bean to town for me when he was 98. He lived to be 101.
Wow.
So, you know, I always say when people say, oh, they can't do this in ag or they can't do that. And I say, listen, my grandpa started farming with three horses and lived long enough to see auto steer come into tractors.
Wow.
I think the possibilities are endless for agriculture. We can wrap our heads around electronic tractors or sequestering carbon. We'll get it. It'll come around.
April Hemis, she's our farmer. Corn, soybeans, all that good stuff in the great state of Iowa. April, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, look forward to it.
Sometimes corporate America gives us things we don't even know we want. And sometimes, well, they give us something else. And in this case, that something else is corporate meetings on the big screen. AMC and Zoom are making it happen. The movie theater chain and the meeting technology company are getting together to offer ginormous teleconferences for remote workforces, complete with popcorn and milk duds. Starting sometime next year, businesses are going to be able to book movie theaters in 17 major markets for Zoom meetings. Now, why? Marketplace and Matt Levin has the answer to that one.
Movie theaters are doing better than last year, partly because last year was so bad and partly because Top Gun. But there are worrying signs that theaters' bread and butter, superhero movies, may be getting stale. John Polking is with the market research firm Mintel.
We have seen sort of a dwindling of interest in some of the cinematic universes, Thor: Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange.
The quarterly all-staff won't ever make as much money as Black Panther, but it could help theaters diversify revenue streams. And it is possible that renting a theater will make for better Zoom, says Melanie Brooks at Columbia Business School.
You're obviously less likely to check your email. You're less likely to kind of go off and daydream about something else because you're in like a space that's meant to really be an entire experience.
Brooks worries, though, about how awful Zoom glitches will look on the big screen. But even those glitches could be pretty cinematic. You just have to market it the right way.
In a world where no one sets foot in the office anymore.
Did you know Jim from accounting has legs?
Comes an idea that sounds a little desperate.
What if instead of movies, we had meetings?
But what happens when that idea becomes reality?
Oh my God! Jim's video is lagging! He's lagging! No!
Coming this summer, only in theaters. Zoom Room. Log on if you dare.
Meh, I'll just wait for it to come out on streaming. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Obviously, the most significant loss during the pandemic is the more than million Americans who died from the virus, 6.5 million people worldwide. But maybe the next biggest thing we all lost is just time. Years, right? And depending on how old you are, those years mean different things. For millennials, big milestones have been missed. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that one.
Olga Rudifer has never really pictured herself having kids. But during the pandemic, stuck inside her studio apartment in New York City, she had a lot of time to think, and she started to get a little anxious.
It almost feels like 2 years of your life has disappeared. Nothing really happened. It's just a bit of a gap. And being a woman and constantly being reminded of that biological clock ticking, yeah, having lost that time, I think it really did just hit me.
Rudifer's 35, and she was dating a man at the beginning of COVID, but she says it was more or less one of those pandemic relationships, two people agreeing to create a bubble because they live close together and enjoy each other's company. They're not dating anymore.
We were just in such a lockdown for such a while, and when finally things started opening up, I felt like this is the time to really take it seriously.
For Rudifer, take it seriously meant freezing her eggs. She's on her second round of retrieval. And though she still doesn't know if she wants kids, she thinks she'll feel a big sense of relief once she's banked enough eggs. Some of her friends have taken the same step, and so are more women in general. Dr. Alan Copperman, director of reproductive medicine at Mount Sinai Health System in New York, says he's seeing more than twice the number of women freezing their eggs now than before the pandemic.
We all lost a couple of years to the pandemic. And I think that those 2 years actually are driving a lot of people to try to make up for lost time and take advantage of the egg freezing technology that will allow them to maybe get that time back on the back end when they're ready to build their family.
For most people, building a family starts with dating. And more than 60% of single and looking adults say dating has gotten harder during the pandemic. That's according to a Pew study that came out earlier this year, as if we needed a study to confirm that. Brandon Wagner, a professor of sociology at Texas Tech, says, remember, for a while, meeting new people was actually kind of scary. So in-person dating took a dive.
Just kind of reducing that mixing and mingling, if you will, has some implications for down-the-road partnership formations.
Marriage rates have gone down, and the rates from 2021 don't make up for all the weddings that were canceled. Because besides the interruption in dating, Wagner says when the world feels uncertain, emotionally and financially, people delay taking big life steps.
It's fair to make those connections between economic precarity and just like the uncertainty of job loss. Like, we know that that's associated with like consequences for things like marriage and partnership.
The last period of uncertainty was the Great Recession. Fertility rates plummeted and never rebounded, and that's had economic consequences. It's one of the reasons our labor force is shrinking and aging. But for individuals, there are emotional costs, especially when the cause, a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic, is totally out of your control. Marty Hazelton is a professor of social psychology at UCLA.
There's something very psychologically potent about the number of years that you have been alive and whether you have done certain things by various milestones. So if you are already feeling like you hadn't achieved what you wanted to, and you're looking at your peers and they had, then I think that might be very anxiety producing.
Hazelton says people of a certain age, especially women, feel pressure to hurry through their careers, partnership, and family formation so they can fit it all in. And the pandemic, it's been a story of hurry up and wait. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up.
No college debt. Make him bank immediately. Make him as much money as possible.
Not so bad, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 333 points today, a touch over 1%, finished at 33,160. The NASDAQ added 51 points, about a half percent, 10,616 there. The S&P 500 gained 21 points, nearly 0.6%, 38.28. Following up on Matt Levin's story, I guess the markets liked AMC's idea for hosting Zoom meetings. Shares picked up 5.4%, ticker symbol ZM, which is Zoom, not Z-O-O-M. ZM, down 1.6%. The CEO of Kohl's is going to be stepping down to take over at Levi's. That sent shares of Kohl's up 7.3%. Activist investors want new blood in management. And on the board, it seems shares in Levi Strauss gave up about 3.1%. Bond prices rose. When that happened, the yield goes down. Yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.13%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years.
On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We're a couple of days into this year's United Nations Climate Change Conference, 2 weeks of talks and sometimes, honestly, sharp elbows and pointed rejoinders about cutting greenhouse gases and dealing with the amount of carbon we've already dumped into the atmosphere and who is going to pay for the work that has to be done because of that. In that spirit, that is reducing greenhouse gases, an energy company in North Carolina says it's going to be building a new power plant with what it claims are close to zero emissions. Marketplace's Andy Euler is our man on energy.
The company Net Power says the plant will sequester surplus CO2 underground. CEO Ron DiGregorio says the company's been working on the concept for at least 10 years.
Big company support stepped in before government support. In fact, we said, look, Department of Energy, we know you're interested. And when we get there, DOE, we are certainly going to want to have the support of the government. And we're at that point in time.
The company plans to build a 300-megawatt power plant in Odessa, Texas. Early estimates put the cost at $750 million. Now, that's expensive for a traditional power plant of this size, but DiGregorio says carbon capture incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act have helped make it economically viable. Doug Vine at the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions says technology like this could actually help power grids add more renewable energy sources.
We need firm, dispatchable, low-carbon power generation, and that is extremely helpful in balancing a future power system that's going to contain large amounts of variable renewable wind and solar power.
But it's still an investment in fossil fuels, something David Schlissel at the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis is concerned about. He says instead of the government helping fund projects like this,
we could be putting in renewables and battery storage that would start reducing emissions in 3 years.
Schlissel says it'll be at least 5 years before we know whether Net Power's commercial plant is working as advertised. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
There was some research out the other day from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center that showed the drop in college enrollment we've seen during the pandemic has pretty much continued. Traditional four-year undergraduate numbers are down 4.2% from 2020. One notable exception, though, skilled trade programs that get students ready for specific jobs. And within that, again, according to the Student Research Center, there are some areas of study that are more popular than others, among them mechanic courses and precision production programs. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports now on why more people are seeking out the trades.
A group of students is standing around a bright red motor, measuring its parts down to the 10,000th of an inch. They're just beginning the diesel mechanics program at the Tennessee College of Applied Technology in Nashville.
We're a month in
and we're already tearing apart engines, so we're learning pretty quick.
Yeah. All of these students have a clear reverence for their instructor, Pat Dillard, who spent about 40 years working in the diesel industry.
I've been around the world mechanicking, was in Alaska working there.
Also Antarctica, his students remind him.
I would never have gone anywhere without having a good career.
And that's why these students are here. The median pay for a diesel technician is about $49,000, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
So, no college debt, make them bank immediately, making as much money as possible.
Leah Garten is 18 and lives in Hendersonville, about 30 minutes down the road. This program lasts 20 months, and tuition is around $6,700. But like the majority of the students at Tennessee's technical colleges, Garten doesn't pay anything. State programs cover costs for residents who complete the FAFSA. She was thinking about being a cardiovascular surgeon, but COVID made her reconsider. Plus, she feels comfortable in a garage.
So I grew up around cars pretty much. My grandfather owns an old hot rod lot in Hendersonville. Just kind of picked up some things along the years, and now I'm here.
In the next room, which is actually a garage, I interrupt 21-year-old Jonathan Ellis, who's itching to get back under a truck cab where he's replacing the brakes.
My goal is to make sure that this retaining spring goes around the S-cam so that they'll hold it in place.
Ellis is further along in the program and will graduate in April with his certificate in diesel and heavy equipment. He's already working a few days a week at the trucking company Western Express.
I looked up jobs that were a necessity and jobs that I could do, and diesel was the one that I chose. I almost chose auto mechanics, but I didn't choose that because when COVID happened, there weren't as many cars on the road, but the number of trucks on the road stayed the same.
The school's accreditation hangs on how many students actually get positions in their fields after graduating. Other trade programs there include cosmetology, nursing, and early childhood education. All of them last less than 2 years and lead to different wages. Nathan Garrett, the college president, says employers are hungry for workers.
If we double the capacity, we'll still not graduate enough students to meet the need of industry in this area.
The school has about 1,500 students. Last year, 3/4 of them graduated, and of those, 82% got jobs immediately. And the whole Tennessee system has good connections with industry, according to the Association for Career and Technical Education. Meanwhile, Joshua Weiner with the Aspen Institute says liberal arts colleges could take a note from the way technical schools deliver information.
We know that the way adults learn is in short bursts of theory and then application immediately. And that's really what technical colleges do.
But Weiner also points out that while the number of good-paying jobs that require a technical certificate is holding steady, the number that require a bachelor's degree is growing.
And so there's an interesting tension between the growth of technical education and the goals of talent development and economic mobility.
At the Technical College in Nashville, 24-year-old Abby Carlson is studying welding. And she's not focusing only on the money. She also likes the work.
It's not boring ever. Like, every day, like, it's exciting to do it. And it's a lot of work, but it's how hard you work pays off. Like, you can come in here and kind of put, like, your half best into it, but that's what you're going to see. I mean, it's kind of an art form.
An art form that, right now at least, is in demand. In Nashville, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, by way of preface to which I will note that Bitcoin is off 11% as I speak these words. Cryptocurrency isn't really actually useful money yet, but it will be one day, which is why this news matters. The world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange, Binance it's called, announced today that it's buying a smaller yet still big rival, FTX. It was more of a rescue, really. FTX was having some serious liquidity problems as it faced a slew of withdrawals the past couple of days. As always, for those of you who are tempted, ask yourself this: would you take your paycheck in Bitcoin? Okay, off we go, but here's your moment of economic context, just because it is our job to keep an eye on this stuff so it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Kristen Schwab did a story for us yesterday, I think it was, on tech layoffs. Here's another entry in that file. Salesforce cut its sales team this week. No confirmed number from the company, perhaps in the hundreds. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Miettinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of That Slice of the Marketplace conglomerate. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read,
Well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.